Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter in Washington. Today is December 26, 1978, and this is my audio letter number 41. Yesterday, my family and I were among the millions of Christians worldwide who were celebrating the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. And yet, Christmas itself may soon become a thing of the past in America. Because even as I say these words, the silent Bolshevik takeover of America is showing itself in drastic changes in church worship in many areas. In every possible way, Jesus Christ is being removed from our minds, and ideas foreign to Christianity are being substituted in His place. At this rate, it will not be long before Christmas itself is outlawed by the Bolsheviks, just as they did in Russia 6 decades ago. Meanwhile, the Bolsheviks in our midst are using the Christmas season to divert our attention from their satanic intrigues, just as they have done in the past. Economic manipulations are being set in motion to lead to accelerating stagflation here in America. That is, inflation combined with depression. Political maneuvering, both here and abroad, is setting the stage for Bolshevik dictatorship and soon nuclear war one. Militarily, the Bolsheviks are pressing forward with feverish preparations to fight a war with Russia that will kill millions of us. For their part, the Bolsheviks also refuse to face reality. For them, America is fast becoming their last pasture to roam around in, and it is their last stand. They believe they must win here in order to wreak revenge, not only on Russia, which is expelling their kind, but also a Russia which has become a Christian nation once again. My three topics for this month are topic number one, the economic countdown toward nuclear war one. Topic number two, spiritual warfare and the collapse of trust. And topic number three, Bolshevik maneuvering to buy time to rearm. Topic number one. A week ago on December 19th, a $1 million discrepancy in the United States gold reserves made headlines. The New York Assay Office of the United States Mint of the United States Treasury is unable to account for at least 5,200 troy ounces of gold, and some say a lot more may be missing. The question is, how much more? My friends, nearly 3.5 years ago, in July 1975, I record audio letter number two. At that time, I gave just one documented example of how big the discrepancies really are. That example consisted of the January 20, 1965 gold shipment from Fort Knox to the New York Assay Office. The shipment came to more than 1.75 million ounces of gold, yet it was not shown on the official Treasury listing of Fort Knox shipments. My friend Mr. Edward Durrell forced the United States Mint to admit the shipment by confronting them with photographic evidence, and yet subsequent Treasury listings continued to omit that shipment, as well as others. The simple truth is that the United States is gold poor. The official Treasury and Federal Reserve documents that list a huge United States gold hoard are totally false, as I have explained in detail in the past. The dollar has no backing, and it is dying. My friends, on November 1, 1978, Jimmy Carter announced the administration's plan supposedly to support the dollar. As part of this plan, it was announced that the United States Treasury would increase the size of the monthly gold auctions from America's alleged gold hoard. Beginning with this month's auction on December 19th, the amount of the monthly auction was increased to 1.5 million ounces. The problem is that there is no way for the Treasury to keep up this charade to fool the public for long. When the auctions began last April at 300,000 ounces per month, the United States had only around 6 million ounces available, mostly obtained from the International Monetary Fund and the Exchange Stabilization Fund. And even this small gold supply is not all in the form known as good delivery gold. The scheduled January auction will include melted down foreign coins as one-third of the total amount to be auctioned off. Can you imagine? But some excuse has to be found to suspend the Treasury gold auctions before the small gold supply is used up. The flap over a few thousand missing ounces of gold at the New York Assay Office could prove ideal for this purpose. or it could be that action will be taken in February by the Treasury to stop all gold sales because they have not stopped the decline in the value of the dollar here and abroad. Whatever the excuse, be warned. In the past, I have explained in detail how the theft of America's gold was tied into the larger plan to deliberately destroy the United States dollar. And nearly 3 years ago, in Audio Letter 9, I described how the gold manipulations were used in March 1973 to force Europe to pay World War II reparations of $45 billion to the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and their military partners. At this moment, David Rockefeller and Company is in the process of extorting a second payoff of $45 billion from the central banks of West Germany, Switzerland, and Japan. But this time, it is blackmail, pure and simple. And while it is being done under the guise of the so-called dollar support plan of the Carter administration, it is actually helping to hurry along the final collapse of the United States dollar. The alleged dollar support program announced on November 1 includes, as its most prominent feature, a guarantee arrangement aggregating $30 billion by the United States government alone. This is exactly the same arrangement as that suggested in speeches by David Rockefeller. Under this arrangement, the central banks of West Germany, Switzerland, and Japan each agree to support the dollar by exchanging their hard currencies for dollars. In turn, the central banks can use these unwanted dollars to purchase United States Treasury obligations bearing high interest rates. But in addition, and this has not been made public before, each central bank is responsible itself for another $5 billion in support. The total currency credit package, therefore, adds up to a total of $45 billion. My friends, this has all been made to appear as a scheme to prop up the dollar, but it's actually nothing more than a means by which the Rockefeller multinational corporations can unload unwanted dollars and receive in their place hard currencies. When the $45 billion in so-called support has been used up, as it will soon be, the dollar will be adrift again, even worse off than before. This plan is a bitter pill for Europe and Japan to swallow, but they are willing to pay the price for David Rockefeller not to rock the boat when the new European monetary system goes into operation on January 1, 1979. As I revealed nearly 6 years ago in my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, there are five Rockefeller-controlled multinational corporations which all by themselves can swamp the European monetary system. The companies are General Motors, Ford, IBM, Unilever, and Royal Dutch Shell. Their combined assets exceed those of the governments of Western Europe. Here is how the so-called dollar support plan really works. First, a Rockefeller-controlled multinational, for example, IBM, dumps $10 million in West Germany and demands the equivalent in Deutsche Marks, a hard currency. The central bank complies, buying the dollars and giving IBM the D-Marks. But the central bank doesn't want dollars either. And so the bank turns around and buys United States Treasury obligations, which bear high interest rates. This increases the national debt, and we American taxpayers pay the interest. So the Rockefeller multinationals get all the benefit, while you and I pay the price. To make these Treasury obligations attractive to the foreign central banks, interest rates in the United States are continuing to rise. This is making the sick stock market even sicker and leading to a collapse in the real estate market by making homes impossible for most people to finance. That, in turn, is producing a downturn in construction with an increase in unemployment that will have a domino effect throughout our economy. So, prices are accelerating while business is headed towards stagnation and depression. The result? Stagflation, as I warned in my book nearly 6 years ago. The long-range plan is right on track. And so, the gimmick sold to the public as the Carter administration dollar support plan is really nothing more than a blackmail payoff. And it is designed to help bring on a major depression in America. But the dollar support plan is only half of the plan to produce a depression with inflation. As I have mentioned, this plan is having a strong impact on one of the two critical sectors needed to trigger a depression, namely construction. The other critical sector, my friends, is that of automobiles. And there, too, ominous developments are underway. In audio letter number 5 for October 1975, I referred briefly to the wise German economist whose information was misused in order to bring on the Great Depression of the 1930s. I studied under this man, and we became good friends. He was the one who taught me to look beyond effects to causes, and he explained in detail how the two critical sectors of automobiles and construction were manipulated to bring on the Depression. Today, the same scheme that worked then is being brought into play again. Last month, on November 7th, General Motors gave the first signal of impending trouble in automobiles. On that day, General Motors announced a cut by one-half in the dividend rate on GM stock. It was GM's way of saying hard times ahead, and the stock market shivered and went into a slump. At that time, there was no apparent reason for the GM dividend cut, since automobile sales this year have been good. But, my friends, those who control General Motors know what lies ahead, because cars run on petroleum energy, and as part of the chain of events leading to nuclear war one, manipulated oil shortages are on the way. Throughout the 20th century, oil has been a dominant factor in economics, politics, and war. As I've detailed on past occasions, World Wars I and II were both fought over oil. In World War I, it was Saudi Arabian and Russian oil, and Christian Russia was all but consumed in the flames of Bolshevik Revolution. In World War II, it was Saudi Arabian oil again, and this time the back of the British Empire was broken. It was also about Chinese oil, whose attempted development by the Japanese led finally to atomic fireballs over Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Today, nuclear war one is fast approaching between Russia and the United States. This time, it is different in one respect. This time, it is to be a grudge match. On one side are the Christian sect who have taken over the Kremlin after a struggle of six decades. On the other side are their overthrown deadly enemies, the atheistic Bolsheviks, who are rapidly seizing total control over America. But even in this situation, energy continues to play a major role. To the Russians, control of nearby sources of energy is a prime consideration influencing their diplomatic and military strategy. To the Bolsheviks, oil is a tool of intrigue and economic conquest, as well as a trigger for war. To understand the real significance of the OPEC oil price increase announced on December 17, it must be viewed in this light of Bolshevik intrigue. Because, my friends, what has just taken place is not what it appears to be. Saudi Arabia has now been lured into a trap. She is to be both scapegoat and victim in the economic chaos and warfare our rulers are now bringing down upon us all. The giant oil companies of the Rockefeller cartel will use the OPEC oil price increase as an excuse to reap tremendous windfall profits. As the American economy falters, public bitterness against Saudi Arabia will be whipped up. At the same time, Saudi Arabia will be blamed for destroying the Camp David Accords between Egypt and Israel. Increasingly, we will be told that the United States must disengage and disconnect from Saudi Arabia. Events will deteriorate in the Middle East, with Saudi Arabia being made to appear even more sinister. Finally, it is all to culminate in the American-Israeli limited nuclear strike against Saudi Arabia's oil fields. It's all part of the elaborate American strategy for a nuclear first strike against Russia, which I revealed in detail 4 months ago. So for both economic and military reasons, our rulers were determined to bring about a substantial increase in OPEC oil prices. To accomplish this, they have applied a triple squeeze on the OPEC countries. The first element of this triple squeeze is the declining value of the United States dollar. Once America's rulers began to actively debase the dollar in effect was on strike against the OPEC countries. OPEC oil was being paid for in cheaper dollars, causing the real income of the OPEC countries to decline steadily. In addition, the value of dollars already held by OPEC countries has been evaporating before their very eyes. Yet, in spite of all this, OPEC oil prices were kept frozen for the past 2 years, and it was Saudi Arabia that prevented any price increase from taking place. The second arm of the triple squeeze on OPEC lay within OPEC itself.
Agitation to raise prices was led by Venezuela, which came under Rockefeller control long before World War II. At the same time, the CIA agents within the OPEC structure made sure that OPEC would continue to base oil prices on the dollar. Our rulers wanted to have a visible connection between oil prices and the value of the dollar for propaganda purposes. What OPEC will finally be forced to do, my friends, will be to abandon the dollar within the next 6 months and begin pricing oil in terms of a basket of foreign hard currencies. But for now, our rulers have forced OPEC into continuing to price oil in terms of shriveling dollars. So now, the predominantly Arab OPEC countries have been trapped into appearing to be the cause of the dollar's decline, inflation, and the coming depression here in America. The third and final arm of the triple squeeze against OPEC involved the actual triggering of the price increase. Some way had to be found to undercut the leverage and influence within OPEC of Saudi Arabia, long enough to force a substantial price increase. This was accomplished by means of the recent rioting against the Shah of Iran, accompanied by drastic cutbacks in Iran's oil production. The recent trickery involving Iran has been very successful in fooling almost everyone. And yet, what has just been done is one of the oldest tricks there is. To illustrate that, let me take you back for a moment to the spring of 1962. At that time, tremendous riots were taking place in Greece. They were being labeled as communist-inspired in the press. And likewise, secret CIA reports were saying that a virtual communist takeover of Greece was well underway by means of these riots. Ex-President Harry Truman, though long out of office, was still very actively interested in the policies of the American government. Also, Truman had always worried about Greece due to its strategic position on NATO's southern flank. Through the Marshall Plan and other means, he had done all he could to keep Greece strong and pro-Western. When President Truman read all the stories and CIA reports about communists rioting in the streets of Athens, he became very worried. But Truman was always suspicious of the CIA, feeling that they were feeding him half-truths. He considered Greece to be too important to depend on the probably slanted assessment by the CIA, and concluded that totally independent intelligence was needed on Greece. And so President Truman contacted his close personal friend, Robert Kennedy, who was then Attorney General. One of the things on which Truman and Kennedy saw eye to eye was their distrust of the CIA. Both were convinced that the CIA was actually serving a different master, and of course they were right. After conferring with Truman, Robert Kennedy contacted George Docking, the former governor of Kansas, who had become a key director of the United States Export-Import Bank. In turn, Docking contacted me and asked me to set up the intelligence mission to learn the true situation in Greece. At that time, I was legal counsel to the Export-Import Bank, but my true function was very often the gathering and analysis of intelligence under the imposing cover of the Export-Import Bank. And while we were at it, President Truman wanted us to deliver a personal message to the Greek leaders. They were laying plans to erect a statue to Truman for his great help in keeping Greece in the Western camp after the war. He appreciated the thought, but he had made clear in rather salty language he did not want any statues. As a cover for the intelligence mission to Greece, we concocted an Ex-Im Bank mission to Austria, Greece, Turkey, Lebanon, and Spain. The story was that we were checking up on various projects where Ex-Im Bank loans were involved. On April 18, 1962, the Ex-Im Bank travel group, which included Governor Docking and myself, left Washington. After visiting all five countries, we finally arrived back here in Washington on May 1. The official report on the trip ended up at 46 typewritten pages. Tucked in, almost lost among all the words, was only one page about Greece. That single page contained only one statement of true significance, and it had nothing to do with the rioting which actually prompted the trip. This statement was, quote, "Mr. Zelotas was particularly concerned about the steady decline in the gold reserves held by the United States," unquote. Mr. Zelotas was an official of the Central Bank of Greece, and his actual words were a lot more emphatic. He said to me that if he did not protect the gold reserves of Greece, quote, "my people would hang me," unquote. But the real information sought on the trip had been the matter of the Greek riots and their origin. That information was contained only in a secret report, which I delivered personally to Robert Kennedy. What I had done in Greece had actually been very simple, in spite of the elaborate cover we had to use for the mission. I went out and mingled with the crowds of demonstrators. Posing as a businessman from Lebanon, I asked what the rioting was all about. Was it communist-inspired? The answers were all the same. Nonsense, they said. The government itself is putting out the story that it's communist-inspired. You see, that way, America will give them more money than to Turkey, unquote. The information which I obtained in this way turned out to be much more accurate than that given Truman by the CIA. As we all know, Greece did not go communist, and today, few Americans even remember the Greek riots of 1962. In the same way, the riots in Iran have been orchestrated so as to create the image of a threat to accomplish a given purpose. That purpose was to provide an excuse for a drastic cutback in Iranian oil production that would help trigger an increase in OPEC oil prices. CIA-directed funds were channeled into support for the rioting in Iran. But this fact was camouflaged by CIA reports beforehand that foresaw no threat to the Shah. The famous November 11th memo of Jimmy Carter, which criticized the CIA for failing to foresee the rioting in Iran, was only part of the cover tactics to allay suspicion. In the weeks before the OPEC oil meeting, the crisis atmosphere surrounding Iran was assisted by certain American multinational corporations. They began evacuating personnel from Iran, and this was played up very big on television. We saw people flooding into airports at Athens, Tel Aviv, Rome, Paris, getting out in a hurry from Iran. At the same time, remarks by Jimmy Carter added to fears that the Shah was doomed. On November 30, he said, quote, "We do not have any intention of interfering in the internal affairs of Iran, and we do not approve any other nation interfering in the internal affairs of Iran," unquote. And in further statements on December 1, December 6, December 7, and December 12, Carter continued to contribute to the crisis in Iran by refusing to publicly back the Shah. Thus, the United States appeared to be deserting him, and the crisis continued to build in Iran. Meanwhile, the oil flow from Iran was cut to a trickle. The other members of OPEC were put under an enormous and expensive strain in an effort to take up the slack. For weeks before the OPEC meeting in Abu Dhabi, this was the situation. The result was to pull the rug out from under Saudi Arabia. On December 17, just 9 days ago, an OPEC oil price increase of 14.5% was announced to occur in four stages during 1979. As planned, everyone was shocked at such a large increase. But the following day, Sheikh Yemeni, Saudi Arabia's oil minister, said on the BBC World Service, quote, "With the situation in Iran, the price of crude went up sharply. And we were not able to argue so much inside OPEC against an increase like this," unquote. For now, the turbulence in Iran has served its immediate purpose of triggering a large OPEC oil price increase. But the pressure, my friends, will be kept on Iran to keep OPEC in line. The recent artificial turbulence in Iran has been a preview of things to come. We have now been provided with a careful demonstration of how vulnerable Iran could be and how vital her oil supplies are to us and the world. And when the time is ripe, we will be reminded of these things for war propaganda purposes. In audio letter 37 4 months ago, I detailed the secret American first strike strategy to initiate all-out nuclear war with Russia. Under the plan, the Camp David Accords between Egypt and Israel are to be shattered in a way that will lead to the nuclear destruction of Saudi Arabia's oil fields. Already, the Hate Saudi Arabia campaign is building up in America's controlled major media. As for Sadat, he has placed his hopes on President Carter. But in audio letter 38, I revealed that Carter had suddenly contracted leukemia and cancer in the left side of the head. I must now reveal that the cancer has begun spreading to other areas of his body. This is the truth behind the recent cover stories about his hemorrhoid problem. And on Saturday, December 23rd, Carter secretly returned to Washington from his Christmas trip to Plains, Georgia. He was here for cobalt treatments at the Bethesda Naval Hospital. My friends, in audio letter 38, I explain how Jimmy Carter's involuntary departure from the scene is intended to help ignite war in the Middle East. Now, those events are drawing closer by the day.